You don't have to go turn into somebody else to go produce really great content. You have to be who you are. Go be the expert that you already are and go deeper than anybody else on that topic and help as many people as you possibly can.
I'm Johnny Page. I'm Matt Verlech, and this is the South Scouting Podcast. Today, we're talking about why every SaaS company should produce content.
So that's interesting. When we were talking before we started recording, we said why every founder should produce content. And I actually think every founder producing content and every company producing content are two different conversations.
They are. Hey, maybe this is a good place for us to talk about. In fact, I think that if you are a founder who doesn't want to produce content, this is probably the very next thing you say. It's like, hey, I can still check the box by having maybe an agency or someone else on my team. I agree. I know I can imagine why you feel like the difference between the two is important, but why? Why is that important? Why should every SaaS founder be producing content?
Yeah. And look, I'm literally talking to myself 5 years ago. Because I was a SaaS founder who didn't produce content. My co-founder did. He didn't really like doing it either. I just kind of kept bullying him into it. But the reason, to answer your question, the reason that I 100% categorically believe today that if you're founding a company, you should shoot content is because we found companies to take a point of view about a problem that exists in the market and bring the solution to life. Like, that is why we found companies, right? Like, it's not about, oh, I think that I should go build a new version of a spreadsheet, right? It's not about the tool. It's about the solution. Like, Johnny, in SilverTrack, like, why did SilverTrack need to exist in the world?
Oh, man. Well, there's multiple layers to that. Our point of view on it was there are great service companies. So we serve the security industry. There are great security companies who follow through on all that they promise their customers. And then there are very poor companies who don't follow through and don't deliver the service. But because the nature of buying security is you're not there with the security company when they're typically securing properties overnight or the manager is not present, you have no way to tell the difference between the two. So we spoke to the security companies that were doing great work and said, look, the way for you to actually make good and have that actually be a differentiation in your service offering is to have a product that shows that you are actually following through on what you did. So our tool was entirely focused on closing the gap between what companies say they did and what they actually did and allowing them to use that as a competitive advantage.
Cool. So to read that back in one sentence, your point of view for security companies is that they are, if they want to grow and be top of market, they're obligated to do a great job showing their customers the work that they're doing.
Yeah. Right?
And there's probably 1,000 ways that they could have done that without SilverTrack. And all of those 1,000 ways were probably a huge pain in the ass, right? And SilverTrack was built to take that point of view of like, if you're running a security company, you need to show your customers that you're actually securing things and taking that operation and giving them a way to do it, which lets them retain more customers, which lets them build a better business, right? Same thing with my first company, UpLaunch. Like, our point of view is that if you own a gym, you should be calling every lead you get within 5 minutes. And if you're not doing that, you're not helping the people in your local community improve their health and fitness. Right. And there's 1,000 ways you can get in touch with people in 5 minutes that are extremely manual and extremely labor intensive and a huge pain in the butt. Or you can use software. Right. So, like, why am I on this diatribe here? I'm saying this because, like, there's the solution that you build and then there's the belief that you have.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that founders should be producing a stack of content around the solution that they've built. Yeah. It'll be a natural second order effect, but people don't like to be sold to. No one's watching your content because they're like, man, like, I just wish this guy could tell me why I should give him money. Like, that's not it, right? We're talking about our point of view in the market and why you should do the thing that you say you should do and like building value around solving that problem independent of your solution. So like the best founders believe something. They believe something that you could also arguably not believe, right? It's like core values. And Zuckerberg had this like core value test where it's like, if you're making core values in a company, the opposite should also be true. Otherwise it's a weak core value, right? Like a core value is like integrity, but there's no company that's like liars, right? Like, you know, the opposite should be true. Move fast and break things, build slowly and don't take the platform down. Both of those could be true, right? And I think the point of view is the same thing. have your point of view, produce your content around a point of view, create a movement in the market that rallies behind the founder or founders who are humans, not corporate yeah. entities. And then that will draw the people to you who you can help with the solution that you've built, right? Yeah. Like, that's why you have yeah. a point of view, scream it, make a movement, man.
It is. I think the reason you share the point of view is so that you can build trust to them. Right. Before, there's no other way to build the trust. If you're not sharing any type of content, the only forum we have for building trust is in a sales call, which people's guards are naturally already up, or, you know, signing up for your product.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think at the time, so at SilverTrack, we took it. It's so funny. Like, I love the yin and the yang that you and I are in many ways. I think it's part of what makes us, what helps us lead the company that we lead and, you know, produce what we do. But at SilverTrack, we were heavy on content marketing. I mean, we did 100 podcasts. We started a website called thinkcurity.com, completely outside of the brand for SilverTrack, like a complete separate website. It was all a webinar series. We brought thought leaders in to help service the industry. And that was all in an effort to, one, serve, and two, build authority and trust. Mm-hmm. Because there were a lot of products in our space. To your point, it's very easy. There were lots of alternatives to solving the point of view that we had. But the only way that we look different is that we're adding value to our prospects ahead of time. And by adding value, we're building trust. So that it's not as big of a leap when I get them on a sales call to say, look, you're just going to, at some point, you're going to have to trust me that we're going to be able to. I'm going to demo as much as I possibly can. We can do a little proof of concept. I can de-risk the offer. But at the end of the day, I'm going to ask you to make a leap. And I'm helping shorten that leap by producing content that allows you to hear how I think, how we, you know, our experience with the problem in the industry, et cetera.
And I think that this is like, it's extra potent when you're running a vertical SaaS business, right? Because then you have like a tight market who's laser focused on their awareness of the problem and also the authenticity of the people that they're listening to, right? And like, I'm no marketing guru, but like, if you think of the different stages of awareness, right? I have a really simple version. You probably have a fancier version, but like, I bucket prospects when you talk to them into like three categories. They're either like unaware of their problem aware, or they're solution aware, right? So like, they're unaware, you get on a sales call and you're like telling them why they have the problem that you fix. That's hard and isn't fun. And then you've got like the problem aware people who are at least like, hey, I've got this problem. Can you help me? And then you've got the solution aware, like your, you know, easiest ones where like, you know, I already know that you can solve this problem. Like, can we start? And so for me, if I'm trying to like figure out like the ROI of doing this content, I really want to build a mechanism to at least let myself talk to as many problem aware or better prospects as possible, right? Because a lot of the time, the point of view is reinforcing the fact that the customers do have the problem in the market that you have the point of view about. And they might not have even got that. I can't tell you how many gym owners I talked to in the early days before we had a hashtag, no lead left behind. Like, we were all about just pushing on that one problem. But like in the early days, they didn't even know that they were leaving business on the table by not calling their lead back. Right. Yeah. I mean, like, they knew it conceptually, but there wasn't a performance standard against it. So like, we had to build that line in the sand to illustrate the problem. And then we would have conversations about, hey, how can I do this thing that I know I need to do better? And those were way more fun conversations. It was on the back of doing good content.
Yeah, totally. It's just an easier way to begin a conversation when someone's consumed the content. It's kind of like on their terms, they get to gain more exposure to you and to your point of view and to the problems that you solve. And again, it's just building that goodwill. So I would imagine, look, we've taken hundreds of founders through the process of being reluctant to create content. At times, it's hard to draw the ROI on it. Yeah. Let's debunk some of the, what do you think the most common objections we get? And let's debunk. My goal is that if you're listening to this podcast, you leave and you go start taking some, and you're not creating content right now, I want you to take some sort of action towards creating content moving forward and do that with the confidence that it's going to pay off. So what do you think the founders listening to this podcast are second guessing? Oh,
I don't think I should put time, money, and energy behind this because I should probably just go run Facebook ads or do cold outreach or whatever. Like, it's not going to directly generate demand. That's one. I'm uncomfortable doing any of this. I'm uncomfortable on video. I'm uncomfortable doing a podcast. I don't want to be the face of the company. I can't tell you how many like founding CEOs tell me they don't want to be the face of the company. I don't know. I'm opinionated, but I kind of feel like 99 times out of 100, it comes with territory. Like, it's part of being a leader is being able to like be in public leading. And so I think that that's one is like people don't want to do it. And I think the third, which is actually true, you just have to accept it, is you can be like, oh, I'm going to suck at it. No one's going to watch it. Like, when you start doing content, you're going to suck at it and no one's going to watch it. And that's the rite of passage. Like, that's the hurdle. Like, you got to get those beginner reps out of the way. It's a very big flywheel. It takes a long time to start turning. So
even your like earliest, most raw, unrefined stuff is still really useful. It doesn't have to have thousands of views for it to be helpful. Like, the 100 that it got, it influenced those 100 people. Like, it can literally be like the first content that we made at SilverTrack was only stuff that we like hand delivered to prospects as a part of the sales process, like through an email. Like, there was no expectation they were going to find it organically. There was no paid support behind it. We didn't have email marketing. It was like, hey, this is just stuff that we feel like is going to make a better customer if they know this. And so let's create some resources, whether it's blogs, Google Doc, a Loom video, that's going to help them gain the same perspective that is going to allow them to become a better customer. So it doesn't have to be. And I would say, Matt, the hesitation around, I don't want to be the face of the company, probably comes with a lot of limiting beliefs on like what that actually looks like. Like, you don't have to be anything other than you. The reality is, if you have a great product, you, your life experience and your perspective were perfectly made to find and solve that problem. So there's actually like no better person to do it. No one. Like, Jeff Bezos couldn't come in and do a better job being the better, you know, face of the company. Steve Jobs couldn't, than you, for the problem you solve, because they didn't have your life experience. And so I think you sharing authentically, the cool thing is you have something no one else has. So as raw and unedited and unrefined as it is, just start sharing. The cool thing is I'm asking you to talk about the stuff that is like right in your sweet spot. Like, holy shit, you built a whole product on it. Like, you know this like the back of your hand. I'm not asking you to like talk about something you haven't done before. We're talking about like right in your sweet spot. Talk about the stuff that your wife's probably, you know, tired of hearing about it at the dinner table. Your kids are probably tired of hearing about it. Your friends are probably tired of hearing about it. Turn on your camera and start talking about the thing you're passionate about. You know, I think that we mistake how much consumption actually is required to have it move the needle. Hey guys, quick pause here. There is a treasure trove of blueprints and resources that will help you get to the next level in your SaaS business over at saasacademy.com. If you're a founder, you've got to bookmark that site. We'll see you over there.
It's funny, I was coaching a founder the other day, and you know, she's the CEO of an AI scheduling platform. And we were talking about like what type of content to produce. And like her concern was like, how do I go like so broad where I can talk about all these different problems, but really I'm just an expert in one thing. And like, that was the answer, is like, you are the expert in this one thing. You have not yet remotely maximized the depth at which you can talk about the one thing in which you are an expert, right? So it's like, it was this really fun conversation of like, you don't have to go turn into somebody else to go produce really, really great content. You have to be who you are. Right? Mm-hmm. Which is the expert in this one thing that's a valuable problem to solve for your ideal customers in the market. And you go be the expert that you already are and go deeper than anybody else on that topic and help as many people as you possibly can. And the second order effect of that is that you'll have the positioning as a leader that you want in the marketplace, and it'll make everything else about running your company easily. You know? So I love that, dude. I've even given it a name. You know, like, I've been working on my own content, and I noticed, much to my dismay, that like the first few pieces of video content I shot, I felt like I wasn't showing up authentically. And so I named him Content Matt. And the mantra I have with my team is Content Matt Must Die. Right. And so anytime I feel like I'm straying from being who I am, which is like a guy who has gone from, you know, riding fire trucks to founding a SaaS company to, you know, leading it through an acquisition to running this company, like, and all the weird quirks and life experiences that come with that. The minute Content Matt shows up, I beat him in the head with a baseball bat. Content Matt Must Die, right? And because the only thing you can be long-term is your authentic true self. That's the only thing you'll never get tired of being when you're producing content or anything else, is who you are. So, like, be an expert in the problem that your business solves. Have a point of view that you truly believe as your authentic self, and then go show up that exact same way in the marketplace and in the world. And like, man, it probably feels like a lot less of a reach when you approach it that way, because it's just who you are, dude. I think you nailed it.
Yeah. And I think there's no way to hide from the reality that who you are is going to show up in your business. So it's going to attract certain team members, which is going to influence the culture of your company, which is going to influence the customers you attract and keep. So there's already this dynamic happening. Like, you're not actually hiding from anything by not producing content, but we can accelerate the benefits of you being you if you just turn on the camera, shoot some videos, whether, or maybe you write, whatever it is. You're actually accelerating the attraction of your tribe, the people who you are uniquely qualified to serve.
Dude, that's like a huge unlock that we didn't even get into on this episode, which is like, we talked all about the impact it can have on your positioning as a leader in the market, impact that has on recruiting and affecting team members. Like, you know, people always say that old thing, like, right, you don't quit your job, you quit your boss. But it's the other way around too. Like, a lot of the time, the most charismatic leaders, they could go work for the trash company and they would have 10 A players picking up cans, right? Yeah. Like, you got to be that leader who can attract the team that you want to have to go build the company that you deserve. Like, you got to be that person. I think the effect that doing content can have on recruitment is bonkers. And like, most people, 99% of founders don't even consider that angle.
Dude, one more, just to double click on that. I'm working on this new project to help high-level CEOs refine how they do executive compensation. And I was meeting with some recruiters this week, and I asked them, you know, hey, you know, they see hundreds of offers come across their desk to see the hit rate, all that. So as a part of the research process, I was talking to some recruiters and I asked them, hey, what are the intangibles? Like, we talked about, you know, equity, we talked about variable comp, base comp, all, you know, benefits, severance, all of it, all the stuff that goes in the offer. What's the intangibles that founders win on, or that companies win on, that we haven't talked about? And that was the number one thing. It's, hey, the founder and their team are producing content, because it allows, again, it's de-risking. It shows us what is happening inside the building. And so it makes it much more likely that you can, again, you're attracting your tribe. You shine your light brighter, you can attract the people that can help you, like, you know, build the company and achieve the mission.
I wouldn't have guessed that that would have made the list. I love that it did. That's super cool, man. Yeah. That's a great share.
Yeah, yeah,
I wouldn't have guessed that in 1,000 guesses.
I'll tell you, I want to go back to one part in the conversation. There's some great training wheels that you can put on. So like, look, I was in the security industry for 7 some years, but I was not really passionate about security. Like, I love software. Like, I happened to find a product that I was really, really excited about. And I loved the process of helping businesses become more efficient and competitive, but it could have just as easily been restaurants, real estate investors, etc. So like, I didn't come from a background of like deep knowledge in security. So the position I took was to be the curator, to be the person that, like, much of our podcast was me asking security experts questions. How did they solve it? Asking, you know, prospects or clients how they were solving certain, you know, problems in the business. So I just became super curious. So to the founder that you were talking to, the expert in the one thing, and there's probably like that one thing is attached to like 4 or 5 other problems in the business. And you can just become an expert in curating the conversations. So you become like an authority by default. Like, hey, that's why, you know, starting a podcast is such, the barrier to entry is low. I mean, dude, we started our first podcast in like 2015. This was like way before it was cool. And the barrier to entry now is so low. You can just go have conversations with those people, and your curiosity around the other problems in your target market's business or their industry can lead to the authority, the same effects that we're talking about. So it's a great way to get the flywheel spinning, get you some exposure, get you some additional knowledge. And again, I'm here to debunk all of the limiting beliefs that a founder has around producing content. I'm curious, Matt, other ones that we haven't talked about?
There's probably 1,000, but I actually would love to ask you a different question that I think is probably the most valuable part of this whole conversation, because I think we've been very high level on like the why and the beliefs. And I still feel like there's probably a large number of founders who will listen to this and be like, I agree with you. I should make content. I have some of those beliefs. Thank you for challenging them. I'm still not going to do it. Goodbye. Right. And so what I'm curious about is like, from your standpoint, what is the minimum effective dose, right? Like if you were to say, here is the entry level move into just starting something. And it might be a couple of options, right? But like, I think that you and I both share this affliction of like wanting to go from, you know, zero to everything really, really fast. And so like, what do you not have to do? Like what, how do you start? How do you start if you don't want to do it?
Yeah. I mean, I start with the cadence. What's a habit I can commit to doing? So how frequently am I going to commit to publishing something? And if I'm going to go deeper and I'm going to commit to it being like higher quality, then my cadence might be longer. But I would say if you haven't produced content, I would default to a faster cadence. So, you know, one time per week, maybe two times per month, you're publishing something out there and commit to doing it for a long period of time. Commit to doing it. Hey, I'm going to for the next minimum year, I'm going to publish two times per month. Yeah. Or one time a week and make the commitment there. So that's the first thing. Start with the cadence. And the second thing I would start with is, I think your question you're asking is, how do I get started? Like, what's the minimum effective dose? I think I just answered it. But then like, what do I go do next? If I'm committed to doing, you know, one every week or two a month, how do I start? And I would just make a list of the top problems or challenges that my customer has. I'd start with the ones that are related to the product I have in the market. Like that's where your expertise lies.
Yeah.
So if you're serving gym owners and the problem is growth, I'm not converting my leads into customers. So like when it comes to growth, what are the problems that I'm going to talk about? One of them for you would have been the process of converting prospects into customers. So I'm going to talk a lot around all of the problems that come up there. I'm going to make four or five other problems, make a list, four or five others. And I'm just going to rotate through those. And to start, man, you can do lists, you can do how to's, you can tell stories about what you've seen be successful. You can shine a light on, you know, clients that have done it really well. And again, it's not, we're going to stay away from talking about the product. We're going to talk about the process. Like what did they do? They should be able to, most of your content needs to be centered around, they could take what you're teaching and do it without your product and still solve the problem. Your product probably helps it happen much faster.
Yeah.
And that will be the next question they ask when you've taught a great how, and they're like, oh my gosh, that's genius. Matt, you're right. I should call the leads every 5 minutes. Wait, do you have a way for me to like get pinged on my phone? I can just like hit a button and call them right away instead of me like constantly paying attention to my email and refreshing. That's where I start. I'm sure you got some thoughts on this as well.
Honestly, there's just one thing that you said that I love, because A, it's correct, and B, it's the opposite of what I did when I first started, right? And it's focusing on the actions and what you're going to do versus the results that they're going to drive, which is incredibly counterintuitive for founders, because for the most part, we're looking at investing assets, right? Money, time, people, energy into initiatives that should drive a result in the company. And I just think that sometimes creating content, it's one of those things, especially when it's like a cold start from nothing, like nobody knows who you are. It's one of those things that you have to do on faith and realize that it might take a year for anything cool to happen. But it's such a long cycle to see like demonstrable ROI that you just got to commit to the activity, not necessarily the outcome. And so I think that was an interesting point, especially if you find that like, you're naturally hesitant to doing it, because it's almost like you're incentivizing yourself to like not see the results that you said you would want to see. I'm going to say like a lofty goal. My content should be producing a customer a week and it didn't happen in the first 4 weeks. So now I'm going to stop doing this thing I didn't really want to do anyway. Like it's really easy to create that self-fulfilling prophecy unless you do what you said, which is like commit to the output activities over a longer time horizon and then come up for air. Like what we did with this podcast, right? We agreed to do 100 episodes before we decided if it was worth doing or not. You know, and so now we just get to do the podcast and have an awesome time.
I'll tell you another place to start. If you're not sure what content to start producing, you have a cheat code. If you're doing all your demos or you are onboarding your customers, there are topics. The process of doing a demo, especially for an earlier stage SaaS product, is you are going to be educating the customer on the problem and then demonstrating how you solve it as well. Like most of the time, there's some education involved. So for example, we've got a client who helps e-commerce brands track their LTV so that they know how much they can spend on ads. Well, like there's going to be questions like, okay, what are benchmarks? And that'd be a place where I would start, right? So in your sales conversations, you're going to be confronted with questions that you can then say, hey, again, I think you keep coming back to, Matt, this producing, you know, ROI on content actually producing demand and producing revenue. I'm saying, how can it actually make your sales process happen faster? How can it have you less of you involved in the process? So, you know, if you're answering that question on the demos every time, you could say, you know what, that's a great question. I'll send you a full resource. I created a guide or a video that breaks that whole thing down. And now you get that time back on the demo. So yeah, I think that's another angle to look at. What questions am I getting frequently and how can I produce content based on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to leave it, man. I think if nothing else, like you're starting a company, you're founding a company, like you have expertise in your problem space, just amplify it to the world. There's very little bad that can come of it. And most of the reasons we don't do it come from inside us, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
I would say most companies you admire are doing this.
Yeah, that's a truth.
So,
and most people you'd want to go work for are probably doing it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. All right, Matt. Good jamming.
You too.
We'll talk soon.
Later.